Welcome to the CDH Conversation Podcast, where we will be speaking on the proposed regulatory changes that could reshape the business process outsourcing industry in Kenya, also known as the BPO. My name is Melissa Wekesa. I am an associate at CDH Kenya. Joining me today is Christine Mugenyu, a senior associate at CDH Kenya in the Dispute Resolution and Employment Law Department. Welcome, Christine, to the podcast. Thank you for joining us today. Business process outsourcing became the focus of Parliament of late. One can say it arises from the recent determination in the case of Sama Source EPZ Limited, also known as Sama, versus Meta Platforms Incorporated and 186 others, Kenya Human Rights Commission, and 8 other interested parties. The judgment was issued in September of 2024. The background of this case is that a group of former Facebook content moderators, primarily based in Kenya, filed a lawsuit against Meta, its subsidiaries, and a contracting company, Sama Source, alleging unfair termination, unlawful labor practices, and employer liability. Something to note is that we will discuss this case in detail during the podcast. However, the Business Laws Amendment Bill 2022 has been introduced, whose effect will be to augment the definition of a business process outsourcing company and the employer responsibilities in relation to the BPO. One of the notable amendments is also to the Special Economic Zones Act, which defines a BPO. It's worthwhile to understand that the initial definition is that a BPO refers to provision of outsourcing services to business functions. This include like back office support services in the human resource, finance, accounting, and procurement, among others. However, with the introduction of the bill, the amendment is to expand this definition to include delegation of intensive technology-driven business processes. Such intense IT services include like data entry, also data analytics, software development. Additionally, the bill also broadens the definition of an employee under the Employment Act to include remote workers and those employees engaged in business process outsourcing services and information technology-enabled services, simply known as ITES arrangements. An ITES is a service delivered with the help of information technology. Such services are examples of different tasks that a company hires another company to do, and they use technology essentially to do it. It is basically a subset of a business process outsourcing service. Examples of ITES include call center services, data entry management services, tech support, among others. I will invite Christine to answer to my first question. Given the regulatory landscape, it will be crucial for BPO companies to understand the importance of this new bill. So, Christine, what are some of the amendments that the bill seeks to introduce under the Employment Act?
Thank you, Melissa. That's a very good question. So the Business Law Amendment Bill 2024 aims to introduce some changes to the Employment Act. So the first change is that it seeks to redefine what an employee is in the Act, and the bill seeks to amend the definition of an employee to also include persons who perform their duties remotely or on-site within a BPO or ITES arrangement. The second major change that the amendment bill seeks to introduce is that it is introducing a definition of a BPO in the Employment Act. The proposed law seeks to define a BPO as the act of transferring the recurring internal activities and decision rights of an organization to a third-party service provider as set out in a contract. Then another key change that we are seeing that is seeking to be introduced by the Business Law Amendment Bill is the redefining of an employer. So the proposed definition is that an employer will now be defined as any person who enters into a contract of service to employ a person whether for on-site or remote work. And this will also include an agent, foreman, or manager of the person. So you can see that this definition will emphasize accountability, making it clear that employers, whether they are primary or third-party beneficiaries of the work, that they must now uphold their responsibilities.
Thank you, Christine, for opening up the discussion on the introduced amendments. We understand that an employee in law, looking at the Employment Act, is that a person employed for wages or salary, an apprentice, indentured learner. But with this amendment, it will now include anyone working remotely or on site under the BPO. You have also mentioned that it will enhance the accountability aspect of a BPO as being an employer. What is the implication of this change for BPO companies regarding the labor laws in Kenya?
So if these changes to the Employment Act are passed into law, they will indeed have significant impacts for the BPO companies operating in Kenya. So firstly, you will note that the BPOs now will need to ensure that they are compliant to the employment regulations, including providing the necessary tools and equipment, even to remote workers. So this amendment signals that there is a push to have a more stable and predictable legal environment when it comes to employees in Kenya. And then it will also provide clarity on roles and responsibilities, which is crucial for companies looking to outsource services here in Kenya. Then the second impact that this law will have on BPO companies operating in Kenya is that now we are seeing that there will be enhanced employee rights, as a bill is seeking to strengthen the rights of employees in BPO companies, which will lead to stricter labor practices and compliance requirements. This is because an employer now operating as a BPO company or a provider of the ITES service will no longer have the defense that it was not in fact a beneficiary of the services of the employee in case an employee raises a claim against them. So this amendment to the law will also open up or will see potential legal risks in terms of non-compliance, because due to these added obligations to the BPO companies operating in Kenya, there will be a need for them to comply with the requirements, and any non-compliance would of course expose the BPO companies to employment suits from employees, which was not the case before.
Certainly, Christine, that is correct. It was not the case before. There is a potential legal risk on non-compliance with the fact that there will be no deflection of liability where employee file claims against the BPO companies. There is also an amendment to the Occupational Safety and Health Act with respect to the responsibilities of BPO companies as employers in this case. Could you highlight what these changes are?
So in terms of the amendments or the proposed law, the amendment now seeks to extend the scope of the Occupational Safety and Health Act to explicitly cover remote work and other non-traditional arrangements common in the BPO industry, with the opening up of the definition of an employee to include those who are performing duties remotely under a BPO arrangement or ITES arrangement. This means that the obligations that an employer has in the OSHA Act will now apply to these remote workers. And then also you will note that the Amendment Act expands the definition of a workplace to also include any location which they have indicated there as could be land, premises, vessels, or remote sites where employees are working, which means that the obligation to ensure that these workplaces are safe is now going to be explicitly captured in the law. So bearing in mind the legal framework under the OSHA Act, Melissa, what do you think this means for BPO companies?
I think that the meaning for this introduced amendment is that BPO companies will now have obligations under the OSHA Act to provide safe working environments, and not just to physical places for companies who have physical locations of their offices. The obligation for safety also extend to remote working. So it will be interesting to see how that will play out in reality of ensuring people in different parts of the world, because remote working covers an entire region. anyone can work from anywhere in the world, whether they're traveling in different countries, how that will come to play out in case of any event that basically is not safe for the employee. Also, it will now open up the discussion to online safety with respect to any online harassment that employees can face. It will be a good way to start the conversation on regulating that sector.
Now, just on what you've touched on that point, I want us to go back to the case which you had alluded to in the beginning of the podcast. And I want us to discuss the recent Court of Appeal judgment on the role of BPOs and ask you to please provide a bit of background on it and just explain to us what was the case about.
Yes, Christine, the case of Samasource EPZ Limited, SAMA versus Meta Platforms and 186 others. This case was an interesting case that touched on the role of BPO companies. We have like a group of former Facebook content moderators who are primarily based in Kenya, filed a lawsuit against Meta and a contracting company called Samasource. The allegations revolved around unfair labor practices, where the workers were claiming that they were being subjected to toxic work environment, excessive workloads with content moderation, and without the mental health support. They also faced unlawful redundancy, where they claimed that their termination was a retaliatory move after they raised concerns of their working environment. And a key aspect also that came about was the employer liability situation. And in this case, the court wanted to determine the extent of liability of tech giants like Meta for their actions against their contractors. So both sides presented compelling arguments, where the workers argued that Meta and its subsidiaries were exercising significant control over their work, where they were involved specifically in setting the performance standards for the Facebook moderators, monitoring their work and determining their compensation, and not the contractor Samasource. They say that this level of control was what essentially made Meta directly liable for their working conditions and a necessary party to this suit. However, the Meta argument was that they were not the direct employer of the content moderators, and that Samasource, as the contractor, was responsible for the employment terms and conditions of the Facebook content moderators. The Employment and Labor Relations Court, as the first court that had the case, issued a ruling in favor of the workers. It granted them an injunction to stop the redundancy that was being processed against them. It also granted them an extension of their contracts for specifically workers who are working under a contract and were immigrants into Kenya. And it also addressed the issue of medical and psychological support that the workers be provided with adequate mental health to support them. The court also directed that the companies to ensure the regularization of immigration status of foreign workers who are working under a work visa.
Meta did not agree with the ruling and they proceeded to the Court of Appeal. Melissa, maybe you could expound on the three central questions that the Court of Appeal determined in terms of the ruling that was delivered by the Employment Court.
Yes, at the Court of Appeal, the court decided on three major issues to determine the case that led to the judgment of September this year. The first case was determining the employer and employee relationship, that is whether Meta was directly responsible for the workers' rights and conditions, or was it Samasource as the contractor and the sole employer under the contracts with the employees. The court also looked at the lawfulness of the redundancy, whether the process was fair and justified, or was it a retaliatory move, as the employees were arguing in the trial court. The Court of Appeal also looked at the workers' rights and welfare. And in this case, now we touch on the Occupational Safety and Health Act, the OSHA Act, that to the rights that employees are entitled to the right to a safe and healthy working environment. So the court's decision had a significant impact on these three questions. It determined that despite Meta not being the direct employer on record, it exercised a significant control over the workers and was therefore responsible for their working conditions. So now, based on this court's determination, we understand that since they fulfilled the qualifications of an employer under the law, they now became an employer in this case. It also determined that the redundancy process was unjustified and that the workers' rights had been violated, such that they were not provided the mental health support given their working conditions. So to tie to this court's reasoning is that several key factors arose in determining the employer status of Meta. The first qualification was control over work. The court found that Meta exercised significant control over the workers' activities, including the setting of performance metrics, monitoring their work, determining their compensation. These are the roles of an employer in the Employment Act. Secondly, the court looked at the nature of the work. It recognized that the hazardous nature of content moderation work is potential for psychological harm. And one of the roles of an employer is to provide a safe and healthy working environment, which the employees in this case were not provided with. There was no mental health system. The third thing is the lack of adequate support. It found that the companies failed to provide adequate support to workers in respect of anything to address the psychological harm that the nature of the work brought.
And the courts are normally guided by some test when they are considering whether a person is an employee or an independent contractor. What are these tests that the court normally looks at?
Yes, Christine, the courts have developed various tests to distinguish between a contract of service or simply a contract of employment, that is employee, and a contract of service for independent contractors. There are three major tests. The control test, this includes the power of deciding the things that needs to be done, the specific time, the manner, and the place. And this was what was highlighted in the discussed case for Meta by the Court of Appeal. There is also the ownership of tools test, where the courts look at whether the worker in question has his or her own tools, or are they being supplied by the employer. And with this respect, we look at the proposed amendment to be introduced for BPOs, that they will be required to provide the necessary tools for the BPO employees. Another test is the integration test. The court looks at whether the service being provided by a worker in question plays an integral part of the business, or whether it is considered as part and parcel of running the organization. To tie back to the case that we have discussed, Christine, can you inform us how this case informs the amendments to the bill?
So this case is very critical in that it informs the amendments to the bill, to the extent that because the court went into the definition of the employer-employee relationship, and while looking at the arguments by Meta, actually found that because Meta exercised significant control over the employees' work, in that Meta was involved in the setting of the performance metrics, monitoring their work, and also determining their compensation. So the court, while looking at the facts of this case, determined or held that because of this level of control that Meta had over the employees, it led to the finding that there was indeed an employer-employee relationship, which would then now make Meta liable for the workers' rights and conditions. So even though there was a formal contractual relationship between the employees and Summersource, because of that control that Meta exercised over the employees, the court then found that Meta could indeed be held liable for any claims that employees had against Summer and it. So we can now see that the Meta case has led now to the proposed amendments to the Employment Act in Kenya and also the occupational safety and health laws, because it is interconnected in terms of the amendments that are being proposed to the acts. They both highlight the growing regulation in the BPO industry in Kenya.
Yes, Christine, I definitely agree. The growing regulation is gaining pace to control the BPO industry. And as such, we can see also the amendments to the Occupational Land Health and Safety Act to provide safe and working environments for all employees, even those engaged by the BPO industry. So as we draw closer to the end of the podcast, the proposed changes directly impact the BPO. Do you agree that's the case?
Yes, Melissa. The key provisions which are sought to be introduced by the Amendment Act are going to directly impact how the BPOs also carry out their business in Kenya. So, for example, expansion of the definition of an employee to now include remote workers will ensure that BPO workers are now covered by the labor laws. Also, the employer responsibilities in the Employment Act will now extend now to BPOs as employers, as they'll now be responsible for providing the remote workers with the necessary tools, equipment, and also ensuring that the remote workers have a safe working environment, meaning that they are now covered by the provisions of the Occupational Safety and Health Act. Another key provision is that BPOs now will have to be held or will be held accountable for their actions in relation to the remote workers, even if these remote workers are technically employed by a third-party service provider. So like we said, they can no longer deflect liability, saying that they do not have a direct relationship with the employee. The amendment now will see them being held liable for any omissions or actions against employees that they have employed.
And it is right, they will not be able to deflect any liability with respect to the employee claims. And based off your experience on advising companies, Christine, on their roles as the employers under the Employment Act so that they can be in compliance with the employment laws, what will be your closing remarks on the best practices for BPOs, given that they will be now incorporated to roles and responsibilities of employers under labor laws?
It is very important for BPOs to understand the impact or the effect of this proposed amendment law. I think the first thing is that just staying updated to know or keep track of the progress of the proposed law, because as it is now, it is still a proposed amendment to the law, meaning that it has to go through the cycle that bills do before they are passed into law. So keeping an eye out for whether the proposed amendments will sail through Parliament. And then once the law is passed, a key thing that BPO companies will need to do is to review their existing contracts to ensure compliance, because as we have said, the proposed amendments will have an effect on how they operate or how they engage workers. And another thing, or the last thing which we would advise, is that if the proposed amendments to the law pass, then the BPO companies will need to ensure that they comply with all the relevant labor laws and regulations, especially those amendments that we have touched on in this podcast, which relate to worker safety, health, and compensation.
Thank you, Christine, for sharing. I hope you take note of the three best practices shared by the expert in this field. And thank you for tuning into the CDH Conversations. Thank you, Christine, also for sharing your insights and for helping the listeners to stay ahead. If you have any other questions regarding any employment, please feel free to contact CDH Kenya. We are always available. We have everyone on board to always assist you. I have been your host, Melissa Wekesa. Until next time, cheers, and we look forward to the next podcast.
The views and information expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily present those of the firm. All content is provided for general purposes only and does not constitute legal advice. We make no representations, warranties, or guarantees, whether expressed or implied, that the content on our podcast is accurate, complete, up-to-date, or reflects the current law. We accept no responsibility for any loss or damage, whether direct or consequential, arising from reliance on the information which is presented here.